There you go. It is the Saturday night special. We're back here once again, holding it downtown in Chinatown, if Chinatown was somewhere in Tampa. I'm laughing because I was trying to put the – it's just such a ramshackle thing, right? We're just making it up as we go along. I mean, look at my sign. It's on a clipboard. The back of it's from Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Agency, the first one. So I have to put it high enough so I've got, like, books piled up and cardboard boxes piled up. And then to get the Champion glass – very, very cool there. I had to put, like – a bunch of Chris Jericho books and a whole bunch of other things. So anyways, we are here as I arrange my set behind me. It's very, very high class, as you can see. We're happy to be back, man. It was really a big success last week here on Chris Jericho's Saturday Night Special. We had over 400,000 engagements on Facebook, which means 400,000 people knew about the show, were talking about the show, tweeted about the show, texted about the show, all of this stuff, and we had over 260,000 views in just 1 week. So that's really, really cool for me because, like I said, I've just basically thrown all this stuff together, as you can tell. What a concept, right? It really is just a fun thing for me to do for all of you guys and for myself. I mean, my goodness, I've been actually looking forward to this all week. Cheers to you guys. Let's start off with a cheers. All right, ready? Let's cheers. One, two, three. Cheers. Aye. What did we use last week? Here's to the girl with the little red shoes. She likes to party. She likes the booze. She lost her cherry, but that's no sin. She still got the box. Her cherry came in. That's not bad, right? Not bad at all. So we're really excited, like I said, to be here. And we actually have a sponsor this week. A sponsor. First time we have a sponsor. And it is a fine book that came out about 3 or 4 months ago. It's called Start With a Dream. And it is the story of my good friend Joey Quesada, who was on the Jericho Cruise playing drums for Rubik's Cube. He also plays with the Eric Martin Band. I had the book, lost it. So I've got a lot of books up in my bookshelf, but I lost Start With a Dream. But if you are interested in checking it out, please do that. The book is about 17,000 pages long, and it's quite entertaining. Forward by Peter Criss, with a picture of Peter right there, just in case you're not exactly sure who Peter Criss is. But you might want to check that out. My first official sponsor, and a sponsor means incessantly begging to be included on the Saturday special, then that's what I got paid for this. So crazy week we had so far. We did AEW Dynamite Wednesday in an undisclosed location. I'll say it was in Georgia, though. And I had an idea to do this thing with Vanguard One where he kind of invaded my house and did the whole thing with Release the Hounds, which we've already tried to make a t-shirt for, but we can't. Apparently some jackass out there already owns Release the Hounds trademark on a shirt. So I'm sorry. I know you guys would like a Release the Hounds shirt, but we can't make them because it's trademarked. People will trademark anything these days. But the funny thing about that was and the brilliance of that shoot, brilliance. Listen to me, like I'm freaking Kierkegaard or something. The fun part of that shoot was play it straight. The subtle humor. A very Christopher Guest, waiting for Guffman's Spinal Tap influence. The more you watch that video, the more you're going to see. And the secret to my type of humor is you don't laugh like, oh, this is so funny. You just do it. Like people are like, why would you wear jeans in the hot tub? I'm like, no, first of all, they're not jeans. They're leather pants. Okay. And what else is Le Champion supposed to wear in the hot tub? I mean, I'm supposed to wear a fucking bathing suit? Like, are you kidding me? I'm Le Champion. See, it says right there on the glass. So, but you do all these little things, these little subtle things. They'll release the hounds. You expect these vicious hounds. It's just a bunch of friendly, slightly confused dogs that come running out. But people enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. And then found out because basically every state in the nation is under stay-at-home orders, as it should be. Wash your hands, social distance, do all those things that, that you need to do. Listen to what they're saying. It's the best way that we're going to beat this pandemic. Pandemic! Little accept homage there. But so we found out that we had to tape basically 6 weeks of shows or 4 weeks of shows or whatever it may be. We had to tape a shitload of shows in Georgia. But we did it, and we got some great stuff. And I had a blast doing it. I'm not going to tell you exactly what I did on that show. I'll probably let you know later on this week. But let me just say it's something that I've never done completely before. I've dabbled in it on the shows, but never actually done this for a full show, never mind multiple shows. So hopefully you guys will check it out. I know it's not quite the same when there's no crowds in the arena, but we had no choice. It's the way it is. We're kind of the last bastion of putting out original content for you guys. And that means, you know, no people or minimal people. And that's kind of what we are doing it for you guys. Similar to this, I'm doing this for you guys because I know that we all need some diversions, right? So, and I also know that WrestleMania is on right now. If you guys want to watch WrestleMania, please do. I'm not trying to go head to head with WrestleMania, but the show is called Saturday Night Special. So I can't run it on a freaking Friday night or a Monday night or whatever. It's Saturday night. And if you're going to start a franchise, start something that people are interested in watching, you put it on the same time, same night every week. That's what people understand and get into the habit. And we're not going anywhere for a long time. So as long as you guys want to keep watching this, I'm going to keep doing it for you guys. The Saturday Night Special. The champion and the world. Will we get 250,000 views this time? I don't know. Maybe a lot of people checked it out and went, well, this is the shits. And we'll get 250,000 views. Like just like 250,000 of a person watching. Like just someone's arm watching. Like, yeah, that sucks. But we're excited. Monty Burns says, release the hounds, says Mike Chamberlain. You're right. That's where we got it from. That was actually Tony Khan's idea. So there you go. Kudos to Mr. Khan. So, yeah, like I said, it's been quite a week for everybody, and we're gonna do some singing today. What song should we sing? Do you want to do Judas again? I think that got a pretty big reaction before, so that might be something we might want to do. Do you want to hear another Fozzy song? Do you want to hear a song that everybody knows, like a karaoke tune, "Living on a Prayer" or "Don't Stop Believing" or something along those lines? Let me know what you guys want to hear. This is your show. No, it's not your show. It's my show. And I can do whatever I want, but I will take into consideration some of the things that you may want to do or may not want to do. Jovan Kusovsky says, this stream is better than Mania. Well, I mean, I appreciate that. Like I said, it's not Mania's fault. It is a little bit kind of strange to see like the big WrestleMania signs and all the pomp and circumstance behind WrestleMania, having to do it in an empty arena. But like I said, man, there's no other choice. It was either do it any way you can or postpone it. I know for Blood and Guts in AEW, we made the decision to postpone it, which means you kind of put a placeholder there. You move on to your other storylines and whatever else that you want to do. And then, like we're saying, when we come back, when people are back allowed into the venue, when I allow people back into the arenas, then Blood and Guts will be waiting. Someone just said they're from Riverton, Manitoba. Sorry, it was just out of the corner of my eye, like an apparition. So maybe you're an apparition from Riverton, Manitoba. Riverton, Manitoba is funny for me, though, because and I'm going off on tangents and going off all over the place, and I'm hoping that's why you're watching. But so my very first wrestling involved tour was with a guy called Bob Holliday in Manitoba, and he was kind of the promoter, the local promoter for the WWE. Back in those days, every city would have a local promoter who would promote the show, sell tickets, you know, organize the advertising and all that stuff, and then he would get a piece of the house, piece of the gate. So if you did, you know, $50,000 house, maybe he gets 5% of that or whatever the hell it is. I don't know, 1%, 2%, whatever, 50%, I'm not sure. So And he was also a friend of my dad's because he was involved in the sporting news in Winnipeg. My dad obviously was a commentator for Winnipeg Jets, and he had done, you know, 10 years of NHL, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he was going out to promote his own tour up in kind of the northern realms of Manitoba, which is mostly Indian reservations, First Nations, is what we call them now. Back in that time, from 1899, it was just basically Indian, Canadian Indians. And so you would take this, you've heard of Tony Canello's death tours. Well, those were in the winter. I was never on one of those. I was on this one, which was in the summer. So instead of driving these long drives, and I'm talking 24 hours, but instead of driving them across the lake, which could cut it down to 12 hours, we had to drive around the lake on kind of like dusty roads, and then, no pun intended, and dirt roads and that sort of thing. So the tour was about 2 weeks long, and I was on the tour as a ring boy, basically to set up the ring. It was my first taste of being on the road and being in the professional wrestling business. So our first stop, or one of the first stops on that tour, was in Riverton, Manitoba, a small town outside of Winnipeg. I probably played baseball there a few times when I was a kid. And I had a crush on this girl. Her name is Karen McFarlane. And it's one of those ones where we kind of flirted, and we went to John Cougar Mellencamp together. We waited in line for John Cougar Mellencamp tickets. And so I was always trying to, like, you know, get her to go out with me, or whatever it is that you're trying to do at 18 years old, or whatever, 19, 18. So she was from Riverton, or had family in Riverton, and she was in Riverton for the summer. So when I found out I was going there, I called her. Back in those days, there was no texts or emails. You actually had to pick up the phone, beep, boop, boop, or more like this. And you would stop it, like, I can't do it again. I'll do it again. Finally, you'd get up enough nerve, and you would get a hold of these girls that you wanted to talk to. So I had a Karen McFarlane. She was going to be in Riverton. I invited her to the show. I can get you tickets to the wrestling show. And she's probably thinking like WWF at the time and Hulk Hogan. And no, it's just a bunch of yutzes with me as the ring guy. So she's out there and she's watching the show. There's probably, you know, 100 people there, whatever it was. And during the show, the ring breaks. So I have to go under the ring on my back and hold up the, like, the post that kind of holds the ring breaks. So I have to go under the ring and hold up the post with my legs, like, on my back. And I'm feeling people are bouncing on the ring. And I'm like, the thing is going down. But the only thing that's keeping the ring together is basically my my Herculean thighs. And when I came back out from under the ring, she was gone. I guess she didn't think that my Bush League wrestling company was worthy of sticking around. But it was quite the tour. And that was when I found out all these things about wrestling. There was a guy on the road, like all these just partying guys. And most of them were just like low-level job guys. You know, there might be one or two that maybe were on WTV once or twice. And there's a guy called Caveman Broda. He was also in the ring crew. And he also wrestled. And he used to go into grocery stores and take labels off of the cans of food and then walk up to the cashier and say, hey, this can of food has no label on it. I don't know what it is. I want a discount. And they'd be like, okay, well, we'll give it to you for a buck. I'll take it for 50 cents. All right. So as we were traveling, and he'd be like, you want some food? Sure, you open up a big duffel bag and pull out a tin can. What is that? I don't know. There you go. Open up. Oh, it's a can of peaches. Oh, it's corn. Oh, it's Spam, whatever. So he and I were driving. There's a guy called Brian Jewell, who was a local wrestler, who actually had appeared on like WTV a couple times. And he was driving. He was kind of the lead guy. And I, Caveman Broder was in the passenger. And I, because it was, the ring truck was like a big van, so you could only travel, like, basically lying on top of the ring. Because the ring, you take it down and you build it. So it's boom, 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 boom. And then I'm lying on top like this. So as we're driving, you go over like a pothole, these dirt roads, and you'd be like, and maybe almost hit the roof, or maybe you hit the roof type thing. So then he's just, hey, come here. I'm like, okay, yeah. He goes, take over driving. I'm like, all right. So I think he's going to pull over or something. No, he just stands up. Like literally stands up while he's driving. Stands up. Take the wheel. And I'm grabbing the wheel. He's like, whoa. Whoa, dirt roads. And he's going fast too, probably, I don't know, 80 kilometers an hour, which is probably, I don't know, 55, 60 miles an hour. So I finally get control of this van. I'm like super scared. It's 1989, 18 years old. I just like, oh my gosh, I'm so like, I can't believe it. Thank God I'm still alive. And about 5 minutes later, I look up in the rearview mirror and Brian Jewell is now up on top of the stack of ring jerking off. Let me think about that for a second. So that was one of my first experiences in wrestling, eating unnamed tin cans, almost dying on a dirty road, and seeing a man pull his pud in the back of the van on top of the ring. Next question. That's what we're talking about here, guys. We're just having some fun, like I said. Chris Kelly says, let's have another episode about Italian horror films. I love Goblin. Saw the first show ever in America. Well, that's pretty funny. Goblin is a Italian band. Still laughing with Brian Jewell. It was an Italian band who would do a lot of soundtracks for Italian horror movies. And the funny thing was, I knew this because I was a big horror movie fan, aka Giallo, which is Italian for horror movies. Directors like Lucio Fulci and these type of guys. And the funniest zombie story that I have is one of the first times I went to Eli Roth's house when I met Eli. I met Eli probably about 15 years ago when I went to his house one day. And I walk in and he's playing this music kind of over his speakers. And I said, dude, is that zombie? No, sorry. Is that Goblin, the zombie soundtrack playing on your speakers? He goes, yeah. Like, why wouldn't it be? And I was like, what's worse? The fact that you're playing obscure Italian horror movie soundtracks in your house, or the fact that I knew that you were playing obscure Italian soundtracks in your house. And we've been friends ever since. So there you go. Michelle Perlman says, Chris Jericho, I have a challenge for you in Lancaster. Play Helter Skelter. Wow. I love the song Helter Skelter. Obviously, Motley Crue did a good version, but the Beatles version is still the best. And it's almost like the story behind that, whether you guys know this or not, is that at the time, The Who had a song called I Can See for Miles. I can see for miles and miles. Big crazy drumming, and I know you can hear me, but here's a surprise, whatever the lyrics are. And Paul McCartney heard like how heavy this Who song was, and he was like, oh, really? Like, I can play a heavier song than that. I can be heavy. And wrote Helter Skelter. And it's great whenever he plays it live now. You're like, this is one of the first heavy metal songs of all time, Helter Skelter. It really is. Like, it's, I don't know if you guys know the song or not. I should probably pull it up. It's so heavy and it's so, like, just super creepy and foreboding and weird. And it was one of the first, kind of like I said, one of these really heavy tunes. Get to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide, and the stop, and the top, and I go for the ride, till I get to the bottom, and I see you again! Yeah! You don't you want me to love you? I'm coming down fast, but I'm miles above you! Oh, tell me, come on, tell me the answer. Well, you made me a lover, but you ain't no dancer, no. Helter Skelter.
up, Chris?
You won't you want me to make you? I'm coming down fast, but don't let me break you. Tell me, tell me, tell me the answer. You made me a lover, but you ain't no dancer. No. Have the scepter. Have the scepter. Have the scepter.
Boom. There you go. Little version of Helter Skelter. I've never sang that song before, but I know it like the back of my hand. It's such a killer tune. But you tell me that's not a heavy metal song? That's one of the reasons why I love the Beatles so much. They're one of the bands that created so many different genres of music, from pop music to R&B and Helter Skelter, heavy metal, ska, obla-di, obla-da, psychedelic music. So, great story stuff. Sing With My Baby Tonight by Jeff Jarrett, Hayden Milligan. No, sorry. Don't know that one. Oh, man. Oh, yeah. So it says Dominic Vasquez says, what if wearing pants in a hot tub because becomes a thing because of Chris Jericho? Once again, I have to insist this, to implore this to you. They were not pants. They were leather pants. All right. What's your favorite memory of Winnipeg? Says Stephen Bartram. I'm a Manitoba kid myself. Brandon, obviously a huge fan. Believe you're Canada's version of Bret Hart. These questions go by so fast. I couldn't be Canada's version of Bret Hart because Bret Hart's Canadian as well. But Winnipeg was a great city to grow up in. Very much a rock and roll town and a great wrestling town. And we used to go hang out and look for the wrestlers. And I had a friend called Wallace, Craig Wallace, his name was. And he and I met kind of in high school, maybe a little before, maybe grade 10, which is just the very beginning of high school. And we used to, like, I remember sometimes they would have these big kind of, we used to call them porta pits. And they're basically just big, giant gym mats, like really thick, maybe 2 inches or 2 feet thick or so. And everyone used to just jump up and down on the mats and kind of like, maybe it was in between gym class or something. And I remember he just grabbed a guy and went, DDT! Just like that. DDT! And I was like, you like wrestling? And he's like, yeah. I was like, so do I. And back then, there was a lot of kids that are like kind of like wrestling, but he was super into it just like I was. So we became really fast friends. And we used to go hang out at the Polo Park Inn, which was the big place where the wrestlers hung out, all the WWE wrestlers. They would work out at Gold's Gym, and I would go hang out at Gold's Gym and just watch them from afar, watch them working out. And these fucking guys were huge. I remember Ultimate Warrior coming in wearing his own. Remember that Ultimate Warrior jacket that kind of was like airbrushed or like kind of rayon with his picture kind of silk screened on? He was wearing his own jacket. And these guys were so, so massive. Warlord, his trap started at his ears and just went like that. I was too scared to talk to those guys. So I would talk to the smaller guys, you know. And I remember I saw Coco Beware, and I was like, hey, Coco, I'm a big fan of your singing. Because he had done the Pile Driver album. Pile Driver! And, what else am I doing? I'm a big fan of your singing. He said, oh, thanks, man. So he signed my Pile Driver album. And he was working the Warlord that night. I said, Coco Beware, how are you going to beat the Warlord? He said, I'm just going to duck, dodge, and die, brother. And so I went and watched the match, and he lost in like 18 seconds. And I said, wow, he didn't duck too well. He didn't dodge well. And he sure as fuck didn't die. So there you go. So we used to go to the Polo Park Inn and hang out waiting to see the wrestlers. And you'd see all, I remember I saw Dynamite Kid one time. He was sitting kind of in the lobby. He was wearing like a dress shirt. It was open to about there. And his pecs were just like. And I started walking over to get his autograph. And he was just staring at me like this. And he didn't have to say anything, but I could tell in his eyes. He was like, take one more fucking step and I'll knock your fucking head off. And I was like, just going to stand over here. We met, there was a guy called Sika. I've told this story before if you've seen any of my live shows, but he He's the father of Roman Reigns, the real life father of Roman Reigns. But at the time, he was seeking out Wild Samoan. And they showed all these vignettes of him with Mr. Fuji as his manager. He'd be on the beach, like, speaking like gibberish. And then eating like a live fish, taking a bite out of this fish. And Mr. Fuji would have Sika very crazy. Sika no speak English, very crazy. And this guy just looked insane, big, crazy afro, and just totally nutty type vibe. So he was in the lobby. So I went up to him and I was like, Sika. I had like my little autographs book, you know, and I was like, Sika, you sign. You sign here. Because, you know, he couldn't understand what a pen was, obviously. Sign here. He looks at me and he goes, fuck off, kid. And all I could think was, he speaks English. He speaks English. Did anybody hear this? And I was looking around. He didn't tell me. I just couldn't believe the fact that Sika, the Wild Samoan, had spoke English. Because you didn't know back then, right? You didn't know what was real or behind the scenes or anything like that, you know? So, thanks, Clarissa. I'm reading that. Thank you. So we would stand there, we devised laws, and I devised a system to where one guy would stand with a camera looking at kind of like an area where the rest of us would be walking through. Maybe it's the lobby to the elevator, or, you know, whatever, parking lot to the front desk, to restaurant, a bar, whatever it may be. And one of us would stand there. This is not like, there's no phones back then. Go click, 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 and see how many clicks you can get, and then kind of go from there. You know what I mean? So it would be like one of those old, so I would grab the camera, and then Wallace would stand stationary. And as one of the wrestlers, this is Wallace's face, these are his eyes. As one of the wrestlers would walk by, Wallace would say, hey, Honky Tonk Man. Honky Tonk Man would look. I'd take a picture, and he'd keep walking. Hey, Bushwhackers. Hey, Jake the Snake. Like, if you caught the right moment, you would get it like that, and it would look like they're taking pictures. So when we went and got the pictures developed, just back then you'd have to take them to a pharmacy or whatever, a drugstore or whatever, and get your photos developed. So when we got the photos developed, you would see which ones are good. And the ones that I took for him were always great. The ones he took for me were always bad. The guy would like be right in front of my face, or I'd be like, whatever. And I never had anything. He had perfect ones. I remember perfect with Honky Tonk Man, perfect with Bushwhacker Luke, perfect with the One Man Gang. With me, nothing. Here's Hulk Hogan, like this. There's me behind, like a photobomb of my eye. Hey, buddy. So I was like, okay, so we went to another card, another show, and we tried it again. I'm like, dude, this time, if we don't get it, like, right, if we don't get this perfect this time, I'm going to beat your ass. He said, no, dude, I got this. I got this. I got it, man. He was always kind of a little bit like, no, I got it. So we take the pictures, and there was a big night. The Ultimate Warrior was there, Andre the Giant, and all the big names, like British Bulldogs, Rockers, whatever. All of our favorites were there. And we took the pictures, and of course, you got to wait a week. Back then, you had to wait a week to get your pictures developed. So we go, and we're now in college together. And I'm standing, I remember we had lockers still. It was Red River Community College. We were taking creative communications, which was like journalism and advertising and all that stuff. So we're sitting there, and we open up the pictures, and the first one is this perfect picture of Wallace with Andre the Giant. Like, I had it framed. Andre's here, Wallace is here. Dude, it might as well have been done at a studio. Next one is Ultimate Warrior and me. He doesn't have either one of us in the shot. He's got Ultimate Warrior's back and the side of my face. And I'm like, dude, there's another one in there that I got. Nothing. Next one, Jake the Snake, smiling even. Also like this. Goes by again, Davey Boy Smith, right in front of my face, like that. Dude, I attacked him. We got in a fucking fist fight in the hallway in front of our lockers at Red River Community College. This is not elementary school. This is not junior high school or high school. This is college. You're paying to be here. And we had to go see the dean of our faculty. His name is Larry Partap. And Larry Partap sat us down. He's like, so what happened? We're like, oh, we got in a fist fight. He's like, for what? And he's like, oh, we did this wrestling thing. I took pictures of my wrestlers and he never got them right. He took pictures of them. And he's like, so your pictures were good and yours weren't? And why were you fighting again? And we're just like, ah. He's like, don't ever fight again or you'll be expelled. Kicked out of college for taking pictures with wrestlers. Different times back then, guys. Different times, man. Greg Cantor says, I really wanted to see a Y2J versus Undertaker WrestleMania match. Tell me about it. My goodness. I never even wrestled Undertaker for the first time until I think about 2010, 2009. Keep in mind, I started in WWE in 2000. So to not have a legit singles match with him for 9 or 10 years is almost insane when you think about it. I remember we had a match on my birthday in Sheffield, England, 2009, 2010. It was on SmackDown. The first time we ever had a singles match together. And I was super hungover, like the worst, to the point where I went and found a dark corner. I found like this couch in some office, maybe like the guy who ran the venue in Sheffield's office or something like that. And I just sat in the dark, turned my phone alarm on, and slept till like, you know, I don't know, an hour before the show. Came downstairs and Taker and I put together this match. And it's like, dude, I'm super hungry. I was like, don't worry, dude. I've been there. I said, I'm still going to whip your ass. And we had this killer match. It's very, very rare and very cool when you have a great match the first time you ever step in the ring with somebody. Think about that. No tag team match, no training, no rehearsal. Just putting together a match with somebody that I'll, you know, it doesn't matter if the guy's good or not. I've wrestled guys that are great that we had an okay match the first time, but the first time ever having whatever a 5-star match is in my mind and in the minds of the crowd reaction and all that sort of stuff. When we came back to the crowd, I remember when we came back to the gorilla position where Taker was just sitting there, like just sitting in a chair. I'm, yeah, that's good. And he was right. It was just one of those great, great matches. And guys that I've had great matches with the very first time I stepped in the ring with them, there's few and far between, but the ones that stand out were some great matches. So Taker's one, Shawn Michaels, WrestleMania 19. You guys at home will correct me if I'm wrong. With Shawn Michaels, immaculate, great, tremendous match. Kenny Omega, Tokyo Dome, couldn't have been any better. Tanahashi at the Tokyo Dome a few years later. Love that match with Tana that I had. So there's been a few of them that have been just killer matches right off the bat. Jeremiah Babcock says, most people going digital, do you collect physical copies? And it's rare, few and far between. There were certain bands like Metallica, Halloween, Iron Maiden, those type of bands that I try to get every type of physical copy. But now what I like to get is the box sets you can see behind them. That's a Hardwired box set. And then there's the Beatles White Album box set. And then that one, of course, anytime when you're in a rock and roll band, and which way am I going here? This way? This way. They're both, oh, there you go. Sorry. When you're in a rock and roll band and you have an actual LP that comes out, an actual album, there's nothing better than that. I mean, that's one of the coolest things, actually. That really, really made me feel like the Sin and Bones record, Do You Want to Start a War, and Judas all came out on vinyl. and they're the best to display, you know, as kind of decoration. They're the best to sign for people at shows. We sell a lot of those at shows because people like the experience of having stuff signed for them that they can see you sign. It's to Joe. You write big on it and everything like that. So, did you hear Taker's first match was with Bruiser Brody? I'm not sure if that's true or not. I don't know if I've ever heard that before, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was true. Sean says, how do you feel about Hogan? I love Hulk Hogan. I think he's great. He's a great guy. Love working with Hulk Hogan. If you watch, I believe it's a SmackDown match, Hogan versus Jericho in Pittsburgh. There was two that we had. There were single matches. But I think the one from Pittsburgh, I wouldn't be egotistical in saying I think it was the best Hogan match that he had in the 2000s. Now, we know that was kind of the back end of his career, but man, we had it rocking. Hulk took a lion salt, and he gave me a superplex. And my favorite spot is he would flip out and punch me, and then go off the ropes and go for the big leg drop, and I'd sweep his legs and put him in the walls. And he was so good at reading the crowd, and he'd throw me out on the floor and tell some kid, hold it. You know, he'd hold my arms and tell some little kid, hit him. And if the little kid had trust in the Hulkster and would hit me, you know. And then usually I'd knock the little bastard out later. But I remember one time someone in the crowd, was right when I think maybe Phantom Menace had just come out, or the one afterwards, maybe Attack of the Clones, whichever one it was. And some kid in the crowd had a Hogan is a Jedi sign. And I remember I just cut this crazy promo about Hogan could never be a Jedi and would never be a Jedi. And he was like, brother, I'm the people of the Jedi, we're all Jedi. We're working with the Force, brother, whatever he said. Some, you know, impromptu promo that everyone was just going nuts for. And, you know, just one of those guys that just really knew how to command an audience. And I'll say this too, when we used to be at the Polo Bar Inn, I did meet Hulk Hogan once. And he, when I met him, we're just little kids, man, like 15 years old, hanging around, just looking to try and meet wrestlers. And he was like, yeah, what's your name, buddy? And I'm Chris. Nice to meet you, Chris. And I was like, ah, Hogan said my name. And then when I was in WCW, those guys never, like the kind of the top guys, never really, I shouldn't say they weren't nice, but they weren't the most friendly, shall we say. There was a real kind of division back in those days between kind of the opening match, the cruiserweights, and then kind of the top level guys, that sort of thing. And I remember one time we were, I think, in Sioux Falls, Iowa, and a super long line at the check-in for the flight. And he was in first class line. And he's like, what are you doing, kid? I'm like, oh, nothing. He goes, come up here. I'm like, me? Yeah, come up here. So we go up there and he checks in. He's like, yeah, can you check in my little brother for me as well? And the guy's like, yeah, of course, Hulkster. He doesn't have a first class ticket. Ah, little brother. And the guy checked me in. I think he might even, you got a upgrade ski for the kid here? Hogan was the guy who says upgrade ski. So he got me the upgrade ski. When he first came in WWE, he worked with a bunch of guys like myself and Edge, and then he worked Kurt Angle. And Kurt kind of gave him some suplexes and threw him around the ring a bit. And Hulk came back and he said to Vince, hey, the Olympic kid's a little bit stiff-ski. A little bit stiff-ski. Stiff means hard-hitting for all of you out there who haven't heard that term before. So another cheers, guys. Having a good time here, Le Champion, Saturday Night Special. How's WrestleMania going, guys? Like I said, I can't watch it right now, obviously. I would be watching, probably, even though it does seem kind of strange, like I said, with the no people match, but that's just kind of the way it is. What's the funniest story you can tell about you and Eddie Guerrero? So many stories, man. Like, just one of the nicest guys. Nicest guys I've ever met. There's some stories that I probably shouldn't tell. But we roomed together for a while. And we Dean and Benoit would go in one room for a while, and me and Eddie would go in another. That later switched to Dean and I in one room and Eddie and Chris in the other, because those guys always wanted to get up at 7 a.m. and work out. And Dean and I were like, well, can't we just sleep until 11 and work out at like noon? Like, we've got nowhere to go. If it's a show day, we'd have to be there until 2. If it's an off day, you got nothing to do anyways. Or a house show day, you have to be there until 6. Why are you getting up at 7? We gotta get up, we gotta go eat, we gotta work out, we gotta go eat. So, but Eddie and I roomed together for a while. And he was the type of guy that he likes to watch TV and fall asleep to the TV. I like to sleep with the TV off. Like, when it's time to go to bed, everything needs to be off. So Eddie and I, you know, always would have a problem with that. And I remember one time Eddie said, hey, bro, you mind if I sleep, if I keep the TV on for a bit? And I was like, honestly? He goes, yeah. I said, no, I mean, it bothers me. Like, can you turn it off? And he's like, what? I'm like, well, you asked me if it bothered me, and I'm telling you that it does. And he's like, you gotta be kidding me. Who would say that it actually bothers them? I'm like, well, who would say that it's up to me, and then get mad at me when I tell you the thing? Like, if you say, hey, Chris, I'm leaving the TV on, go to hell, I'd be like, well, you know, F you, whatever. When you're asking me if it bothers you, and I tell you that it bothers me, then turn the freaking TV off. And that led to us getting in an argument where we literally got in a fight in the hotel room. These days it was at La Quinta. And you can kind of fall over into the little, like, there's a little area between the bed and the wall, and we're like jockeying for position, start laughing and whatever. But the next night we were in Minneapolis, we were drinking, and we were at a Denny's, and it came up again. Hey, at least I can sleep with the TV on. Oh yeah, well, at least, you know, I'd turn the TV off if someone asked me to. Oh yeah. And Eddie's big thing was, you think your shit don't stink? You feeling froggy, motherfucker? Jump. That was a good one. Are you feeling froggy? Jump. I've never heard that before. So I jumped, and we got in a fight at Denny's, rolling under people's tables. They're having their moons under my hammy. I'm like, oh, better move all this way. Oh, they're going to hurry. They come back again. And never get arrested. Who's fighting in a Denny's at 2 a.m. and not getting arrested? So, yeah, Eddie was amazing. Chris says, I'm bummed that Fozzy isn't coming to Louisville, Kentucky. We are coming to Louisville. We're supposed to come to Louisville in, I think, April or May. The Save the World Tour has been postponed back to July and August. Hopefully, we will be back there at that time frame. You know, no one really knows. That's the thing. No one knows how long this is going to go. And look at that. Look at that try. That's a good one. I wasn't trying to do that. Like, and that's the thing. I'm reading The Stand right now by Stephen King, which, of course, is about a disease that just kills like 90% of the population. And I'm thinking, like, this might be some kind of a warning from God. Like, I'll kill 5% of the people who get this disease, but I'm giving you a warning that everyone needs to slow down a bit and appreciate their lives a little bit more, appreciate the freedoms that we have, appreciate our health, our families, all that sort of stuff. So hopefully this is a little bit kind of a little bit of a warning, maybe. So that's my theological deal, and I'll leave it there. So, Lawrence Hurley, I remember watching you wrestle live at the Target Center in Minneapolis. You wanted to get Scott Steiner. I remember that. I remember he was stiffing the shit out of him. Once he was like punching me in the face. He was crazy. Like, Scott was super strong, super crazy. The way this match was designed, piece of offense. That's why I do my jump off the second rope and drop kick the guy off the apron. And as he was just beating the crap out of me, I was like, all right, well, I know that I've got one spot coming up. And dude, when I jumped up, I drop kicked that fucking guy as hard as I could in the face. And he stopped being as stiff. He was still crazy and tough. But, yeah. What do you think of Monsieur Raul says, what do you think of Ghost? Tobias seems like a cool dude. Ghosts are very great. And here's the thing. We did a tour called Soundwave with them back in 2013 or so in Australia. It was like a road show stadium tour, a festival. So it was like 30 bands in the festival. And we went from Adelaide, and then the whole crew went to Sydney, and then the whole crew went to Melbourne, and the whole crew went to Perth. And Ghost was on it. We played a couple shows together, that sort of thing, and talked to him a couple times. Tobias, Papa Emeritus at the time, makeup, big Pope outfit thing. And then what they would do is in certain cities, we would go to a city and you'd hang out there for a day or two and they would have side shows. Side wave is what they called it. So we had a side wave show, I believe it was in Melbourne. I think it was called the 40 Watt Club. And if I'm right on that, then I'm a super trooper. And it was us and Anthrax or us and Loaded, Duff McKagan's Loaded. And so afterwards, the show was done. If you're not playing that night, a lot of people would come and watch your show and just hang out because, you know, you're off. You got really nothing else to do. And so there was a couple guys that came and they were watching the show that we did with Duff, Loaded, and Fozzy. And then we were in the van going back to the hotel after. And I was talking to this guy and I'm being cordial, but I'm not like, he's being super quiet. I don't know who this guy is. And he's like, being very quiet tonight. And I'm like, oh yeah, dude. Well, you know, I just played the show. And he's like, why are you acting like you don't know me? And I'm like, I don't know you, do I? He's like, what do you mean? It's Tobias from Ghost. I'm like, dude, you got to give me a fucking clue. Every time I met you, you got the paint on. You got stilts, like big giant heels. You're this tall. Now the paint is off. The hair is nice and combed. You just look like a normal dude, man. You gotta warn people when you are a masked guy, right? Yes. Curtis Spiker, difference between tight and stiff. You're talking about working wise. Nothing. He works tight. He works stiff. He works solid. All those things are kind of compliments. That means you're feeling it. The difference is stiff, solid, tight. They're not dangerous. That's the difference. He works dangerous. He works careless. He doesn't know what he's doing. If someone says you're stiff, you're fucking right, I'm stiff. You're going to feel it. It's going to look good. That's what I always used to say. I used to say to Bob Holly all the time, don't break my nose. Don't break my teeth. And we're fine. You want to hit me in the forehead? Hit me in the forehead as hard as you can. It's not going to hurt. Punch me in the, chop me or hit me in the back as hard as you can. Hit me here, whatever. Don't break my nose. And that's it, right? So it's funny. When Big Show came back, one of his many incarnations, he had just come back from, he was training to be a boxer. And his finish was a punch. Boom. Boxer, 7 feet tall, giant. I can buy that. So his first match with the punch as his finish was against me. And I told him, I said, dude, hit me as hard as you can. Right here. You can't hurt me. You won't hurt me. Let's get this over. I will run as fast as I can. Just hold your fist out and let me run into it, you know? And that's what he did. And I came running. He just went, boom, boom. I went down, cover, 1, 2, 3. And this, I think, was the first time that Vince ever really saw me as, like, a top guy. It was probably 2008, 2007, sometime around there. He's like, oh, my God, that was amazing. I can't believe it. He called me at my house, like, a couple days later. And Vince doesn't call anybody's house to give any type of compliments. He's just not that tight. What happens at the arena, you're done. He's like, you're so tough. You're so tough. And I literally had an imprint of Big Show's fist on my forehead. And this is not exaggeration. This is the true story. So that is solid. That is stiff. That is tight. That is not dangerous. Josh Woodall says, hello from Point Pleasant, West Virginia, home of the Mothman. That's some crazy shit, the Mothman. I've done a few shows about that, paranormal shows, but I've never done one just on the Mothman. It's a very strange, interesting type stuff. Gray Goose, yeah, boy. Gotta love the goose, right? Good stuff right there. Gotta love it. I was at the Raw show in Omaha. Omaha says Dylan, where Dean Ambrose destroyed your jacket after Dean owes me $15,000 for that jacket. That jacket cost about $8,000 to make, the original one, the blue one with the lights on it and stuff. And I used to see people in the crowd wearing it. And I was like, well, who's getting these jackets? And I found there was a place in India that made these jackets, and they cost $500. So I bought one, and I just put it kind of in my closet if I ever needed it. And I had this idea, like, somebody could rip this jacket apart, you know? And so I was thinking, like, first I was supposed to do something with Roman Reigns, and it changed to Ambrose. And so we said, well, we'll have Ambrose rip it up. And we kind of doctored it up a bit, because the one that you see, like, you see it on its own. You've seen people in the crowd with it to this day. And it looks like, you know, kind of, it looks good. You put it up against the real one, it's pretty chintzy. So they put a lot of, they added some studs into it and kind of made it a little more bourgeoisie, so to speak. But when he tore it up and ripped it up, it's funny because the original jacket, this thing was so freaking temperamental. The wires would break and you could turn it on. It wouldn't work half the time and it would just fall apart at the seams, it seems. But when Ambrose started ripping up this one from India, it wouldn't go off. The lights wouldn't go off. He just stayed on. He's ripping apart all this, like, I'm trying to pull this wire. No, if I put this wire, blah, blah, nothing. So, yeah, the $500 jacket lasted longer than the real one did. Angel says, how many teeth have you lost in matches? I lost half of these ones in a ladder match with Shawn Michaels in, I think, Portland in 2009, I think it is. If you go back and watch the Raw after that, you'll see half of my teeth are missing. So they're capped now, and they don't hurt or anything like that. But yeah, the ladder hit me in the face and snapped two of my teeth away. So, yeah, crazy stuff, man. Crazy stuff. So we're waiting to see what's going to happen over the next few weeks. And now they're saying wear a mask. That's why we're this whole time. You can wear that if you need to. But lots of cool stuff. Asher Bomzy says, what's your favorite Metallica song? I always got to go with Battery. It's kind of the one that still sticks with me to this day. Great riff. Blackened is awesome. I love that. And just there's a certain vibe that you get from those tunes. But Metallica is one of those bands that have been pretty solid all the way through. Mackie Douglas Walker, Paul Stanley wants his jacket back. I'm not sure which one it is. Paul Stanley's never had a light-up jacket. Chad Helwadick, Wise Cousin Chad, says, what's your favorite Eli Roth film? I'd have to say, just from where the world was at the time, that Hostel is my favorite and still the most impactful, because I guess it started a genre of movie called, like, horror porn or something along those lines. And it was just so completely bizarre and insanely out of whack. And it was so well done because the characters at the beginning, you think it's almost going to be like a Dumb and Dumber type movie. And then the main character that they focus on is the first one that dies. And it really throws everything out the window. It's a very Tarantino style thing to do. And I think that's one of the reasons why Tarantino really enjoyed that. But the coolest thing is that once again, as I mentioned earlier on, used to hang out with Eli 15 years ago, right after he did Cabin Fever. And he was telling me this idea he had for a movie called Hostel. And I vividly remember sitting in his house, kind of up in the Hollywood Hills, whatever it was, and he was explaining how this girl with an eye and is hanging out, and we're going to clip the eye, and it's going to have some pus come out of it. And fast forward a year and a half later, and his exact vision that he told me in the, you know, in the side room of his house was exactly the way that it translated to the screen. So that's a good auteur, a good vision there. So Someone asked about the scar from Moxley. It's still there, right there. You can see it. Give it another, I'd say, 3 or 4 months, and it'll be gone. It is weird, though, but Moxley headbutted me, and down we went. It just happens sometimes in wrestling. And the cool thing about that was is it happened. The go-home show, as we call it, our pay-per-view was on Sunday, and it happened on Wednesday. So there's no better place to get cut open and split open for real than 3 days before your pay-per-view. I mean, and this is not like there's no gigging or you know, he cuts himself. No, this is real. There's no, nobody's going to gig down like that towards their eye, but that is a real actual cut. And the funny thing was that during the match I had with Moxley, he got cut open too. Eddie Newell says, do you remember who you were fighting in London at the beginning? We threw glow sticks in the fight. You were getting a lot of chance. I guess John Cena. And that's when somebody hit me in the face with a glow stick at the beginning when I was cutting a promo on English people. And I said, all right. I got really pissed off because it hit me kind of in the face. And I said, all right, who threw those glow sticks? You want to throw glow sticks at me? Do it. Everybody do it. Everybody do it. Throw glow sticks if you want to throw glow sticks. And everyone's throwing glow sticks. Hundreds of glow sticks. You can go online and watch it. Look like I was like a jet knocking the glow sticks out of the air. And I got in big trouble for it because I guess the little kid got hit with a glow stick and they had to bring him backstage and give him like a bunch of merch and stuff. Of course, the glow sticks were DX, so Sean and Hunter were mad at me for starting this riot. I'm like, I don't get hit in the face. Look at me. Look at me. And the company wanted me to get fined and all these different things. And I was like, I called Vince. I'm like, you want to fine me for this? This is real true blue heat. This is called heat. And if you try and fine me for this, I'm going to move out. He just sent me a text back, said, calm down, Junior, with a smiley emoji. And when I got back to the States, I went and saw him in his office the next day. And he's like, listen, that's heat. You know, I mean, we don't want that to happen. But when it happens, what are you supposed to do? He said, in the future, don't try and incite any glow stick riots. But in the meantime, just, you know, go with it. And that's kind of what we do in wrestling is we go with things. All right. Well, that was it. That's Chris Jericho's Saturday Night Special. I hope you guys had a great time, man. I did. That's what we're here for. And I will be here next week. We're going to do this every week. And don't forget the sponsor for this week. Even though he's paid me nothing. Start with a Dream. Joey Quesada is the name. Great story about a drummer who came out of New York City with a dream. He played on Broadway. He had a national TV show. He's in a band called ZO2 that toured with Kiss. So there you go. Joey Quesada, Start with a Dream. So well, maybe we'll do the My Prayer next week. So guys, really, really enjoyed talking with you. And we will see you here next week. I mean, let's be honest. There's no reason for us to not do this next week because we're probably still going to say what we talk about. Don't stop believing. Don't stop believing that we're going to be coronavirus. Be safe, please. Practice social distancing. Wash your hands. And love your families. Spend some time. You've been having a great time here So yeah, we're gonna Anthony DeSignia says this is better than WrestleMania. Thank you. This is kind of like at the end of the movie when the credits are rolling and we're answering them as we go. So this is it. The show's done. If you wanna go split and go watch WrestleMania, go do it. If you wanna keep reading my comments here, Carl Walker says WrestleMania. Sad. Thanks, Chris, for your bit of time. Well, it's sad because there's no people. The guys are still working hard, and the girls are still working hard. And God bless them for still wanting to go on a show for you guys. Dominic Rodini says, Chris, you're a singing angel. Oh, Dominic. Oh, stop. Stop. Thank you. Carolyn Baldwin, hold on to that feeling. That's exactly right. Nate says, thanks so much, Chris. Such an entertaining night. Thank you guys for watching. Jason Brooklyn says, this is better than WrestleMania. Well, thanks for being so kind. I doubt that, but We're trying. Sandy Bennett, shout out to the teachers. Yes, thanks to all the teachers out there who have been teaching. My kids have been doing online schooling. They've really been enjoying it. And thanks to you guys for the dedication. Thanks to all the first responders as well. The police, the fire people, firemen, and of course, all the medical professionals, man. I mean, we thank you so much for the sacrifices that you're making, putting your own health in danger, health and families at risk to save everybody and work with everybody, so we appreciate that. Steve Hibera says, let us sing Judas, please. Wow. James Burton, one more song. Wow. Jody Snow, thanks for doing these again, man. Really appreciate it. So, Bill says, give a shout out to my 5-month-old daughter, Sadie. Here's to Sadie. Cheers. Congratulations. Leanne, my daughter, turns 7 next Saturday. Leanne's daughter. There you go. Bev Hollowalk. Annie Bev in York, Saskatchewan. She's going to make me some butter tarts, hopefully, one of these days. thank you. I'm not going to read that one. A lot of bad comments here. I can't be bad. Connie says that was awesome. I appreciate that you said that. Thank you. Jeff Herbert says, great show. Thanks from Canada. Chad Hollowalk, new deep freeze today. Wow. Make sure, I'm excited for the turnout tonight. Hope you enjoy your deep freeze. Katie Francis has been standing the whole time. Thanks so much. Pat Lapina says, wash your hands with a little bit of bubbly. There you go. We got a big announcement of bubbly for next week's show. It's still out there. We've sold a lot of stock. There's still some left. We're going to put a coronavirus special for you guys. It's a tough time. Thank you for entertaining us with stories and songs. Good times all around. Thank you, Roger. Appreciate that, buddy. Alexander from France. You're the best. Thank you, man. Be safe in France. We know it's kind of a hot zone over there. David James, next time you want, I keep forgetting by Michael McDonald. That's a Rich Ward. He's going to have to do it for you. Tim says, thank you for your entertainment throughout the years. Jason Gibson said, thank you. Can't wait till next Saturday. So many great responses here. We appreciate that, guys. Diane says, thank you for giving me something to do with being in quarantine alone here in Orlando. Well, you're not alone. You're with all of us here tonight. Ron Allman, your thoughts on the New Jack episode. Watch Dark Side of the Ring if you're looking for something to check out. Some crazy stories there. This week it's Brawl for All, which is going to be quite funny. Talk is Jericho this week. I've got James Garrison from Tiger King. He's talking about Joe Exotic. He's talking about Jeff Lowe. He's talking about Jeff Smith's baby. Lots of cool stuff. And Shaza McKenzie's been on Friday. Stuck in Australia under quarantine after coming to the States for WrestleMania and having everything canceled. So all of us around the world are feeling this. Savannah, hello, Tyler's daughter Savannah. Kelly's daughter is 10. She loves me. Thank you so much. She loves me. Yeah. Paul says, all three of my boys do your juice spectrum. Do not try this at home. That's the number one rule of everything. It's your birthday next Saturday, Michael. Well, happy future birthday. All right, guys, that is it. Leonard Skinner says the show is done. And I hope you guys had a great time. And we'll see you next week. God bless you guys. Be safe. Stay healthy, and remember, Uncle CG is always here for you. Thanks.